हरे सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषा श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Fifty-two, second paragraph from the bottom.
Advaita Das, my dear brother Digambar, please do not get upset. As you have come to see me and we are meeting after a long separation, I would like you to be content and happy. Why do you surmise that the name Vishnumaya is demeaning in some way? Sri Vishnu is the embodiment of the absolute spiritual consciousness. He is the supreme lord of all lords, and everything is his energy, his maya. Energy is not an independently existing entity. It is the inherent characteristic of an object. Therefore, it is a philosophical error to describe energy as the source and fountainhead of everything. For energy cannot exist without a source. Therefore, first, an absolute spiritual subject has to be established.
So it's the inherent characteristic of an object. Right? It means the object itself. What is its actual nature? That's the energy. Because that's what it can do, right? The character, the characteristic is what can be accomplished or what its form is, what its activities are. These are all the nature. So the form of something, the activities of something, the results that can be gained from that activity, the natural transformation, that's all the energy of an object. Right? Mm-hmm. So therefore, Krishna, being the supreme person, then therefore his energy, then this is the supreme manifestation. Right? Mm-hmm. So this is your superior energy. So he's pointing, Advaita Das is saying, why get upset? You know, saying this is Vishnu Maya and he detests this and this and that. No, it's natural. Energy always has a source. So this is, she may be the supreme energy, but she's not independent and supreme other than Vishnu. Right? That's not going to happen. In the Vedanta commentaries, we find Shakti Matayor Abhedhan, or Abhedaha. The potency and the potent are one. Energy is not an independent entity. Rather, the Shaktiman, Purusha, the Supreme Being, is the possessor and source of all energy. See, the main thing to get upset about here is that means then she belongs to someone else. So she can't become your wife. You know, that's the difficulty that comes up here, right? She can be your mom, no problem. But as a wife, it's not going to happen. All right? Energy is not an independent entity. Rather, the Shaktiman, Purusha, the Supreme Being, is the possessor and source of all energy. Maya is his intrinsic nature and subservient to his desires as the Shaktiman, Purush. Therefore, it is not fallacious to describe Maya as Chaitanya Rupini, Icha Mayi, or Trigunatita, because Maya manifests and acts under the orders of the transcendental Shaktiman, Purush. In this way, she is non-different from the Shaktiman Purush. Right. What were those? Mm-hmm.
Icha, desire, and Chaitanya, consciousness, are attributes of the Shaktiman Purush. Shakti or Maya does not possess independent Icha. She works under the direction and will of the Shaktiman Purush. For example, a person is endowed with the Shakti, energy, to walk and move about. However, this Shakti is only set in motion if the person desires to do so. Thus, it is only a figure of speech to say, Shakti walks. What is actually meant is that the possessor of Shakti, the Purusha, is walking. Similarly, Bhagavan, the controller and possessor of the singular energy, Shakti, is the controller and possessor of the singular energy, Shakti. However, that singular energy manifests in unlimited variety. In transcendental spiritual activity, she is known as the Chit Shakti, and in material affairs as the Achit Shakti, or Maya. In the Vedas, Svetasvatara Upanishad 6.8, we find, the absolute energies of the Supreme Brahman are multifarious in nature. Triguna Dharani Shakti, whom you have just referred to, is actually mundane energy. Material creation and annihilation are part of her activities. The Puranas and Tantras define this energy as Vishnumaya, Mahamaya, Maya, etc. Allegorically, she is said to be the mother of the Trinity, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwar. Also, she slays the fearsome demons, Sumba and Nisumba, and performs many other similar wonderful activities as recorded in the scriptures. The jivas are forced to remain her captives as long as they are engrossed in matter. Nevertheless, when they are enlightened with the transcendental knowledge of their true spiritual identities, they sever the shackles of Maya and win freedom. If one submits to the Lord's transcendental chit shakti, one will eternally experience supramundane ecstasy. Right, so this idea that's saying that she's doing all these things and she's independent and all those kind of things, those are only, is basically allegorically speaking, that it's the Lord's energy that's functioning, right? So because she's doing the work under the direction of the Lord, means you have to say, the order is given that cooking should happen. So you say the cook is cooking, but it's only happening because, or you can say, yes, the food is cooking, right? But the cook is cooking it. Does that make sense? You know? Yeah, if I come in and say, you know, how's the subji? I say, yeah, it's cooking. But is the subji cooking? No, the cook is cooking. Does that make sense? So that's just how these things work. It's just like that. So she is independent of us. She's independent of being bound by the modes of nature because she's in control of the modes of nature. But she is under the control of the Supreme Lord, right? So that's the position, yes.
Is it the same we mean when we say we are liberated if we follow the instructions of the Lord?
We are liberated means we're free. We're free from the external potency, but we're never free from being under potency. Just like the Lord's potency is always directly working under Him, and we're always directly working under the potencies, like that. Does that make sense? So that's our position. We're never directly working under the Lord. We're expansion of the expansion, right? So that's why we're always servant of the servant. Right, the Shakti is the servant of the Lord, and we're assistant to Shakti, so we're the servant of the servant. Right, but as pointed out, is in her office of the spiritual world, then she's known as Yogamaya. In her office in the material world, then she's Mahamaya or Vishnumaya or Triguna Tita. Like this, all these different names that she has, depending upon what she's doing. Right, yes. Yeah.
What's her category? Like, she's not Vishnu Tantra, she's not the Jiva.
She's Shakti Tantra.
She's the only personality there.
No, it means there's the supreme position of the Shakti Tantra, right? And then there is, after that, then there is the different offices that she holds and stuff like that. You know? Is that a 77? Means another one, when she did Jai Ho Ji. When she takes care of the Is this Guru Das? Everyone knows, doesn't know. So original devotees in the whole, you know, ISKCON scene, or the main ones served with Prabhupada and did so many nice things, opened the British Yatra, and then after that, then the Brits came here, and then now you're all devotees. So. Because he preached and got them, therefore you're all the parties. So. You're sitting here.
Better than me. Thank you.
Haribo. Means you have the Sarup Shakti, which is the complete form of the Lord's energy. So she has different divisions. Right? Does that make sense? So there's internal, external, and Jiva. But actually, she is the source of all three. Does that make sense? So in her office and internal potency, then you know, basically she deals as always the consort of the Lord there. In external, then she is as Mahamaya, right? And then there's the Jivas. So you can say that the external is the reflection of the internal, right? It's just a matter of, if you deal with her in connection with the Lord, she deals as Yogamaya. If you deal with her as not in connection with the Lord, then she's Mahamaya, right? So the same person. So they're the Jivas that are separate from that. Does that make sense? So you have the original Supreme Lord, Krishna. Mm-hmm. You have his expansion, which then he establishes all the, you know, all the other realms and everything else within the spiritual world. Right? Then you have his expansion, which establishes the material world. Right? So that way you have three aspects of Purusha. Does that make sense? And then of the energy, then you have the energy itself, and then the Jivas. Does that make sense? Does that sound familiar? That's the Panchatattva. Does that make sense? So that's why it was worshipped in that, because that represents everything. Like that. And then everything has divisions.
That's
Gadara? That's Gadara. And then Srivas is representing the Jivas. Yes.
Which means that the Jiva is always in contact with Maya, can be Mahamaya.
Yeah, no, it's always in contact with Maya. It's just a matter of whether it's internal or external. That's the choice. Right? So if we work under the internal, that's the natural position, we don't suffer. We act under the external, then we suffer. Because we're dealing with unconscious matter. So we see it's nicely arranged that because we identify with it, it works. You know what I'm saying? So a nicer arrangement. You know, you have a little dinky little television screen. You know, it's you can identify with it, but it's more difficult. You get a very big one, it's much easier, right? You go to a movie theater even more, right? In a comfortable chair, something to eat. You know what I'm saying? But the point is the experience you're gaining is because you're identifying with it, but you can't actually enjoy it. You know what I'm saying? You can't do anything with what's on the screen. Right? You can watch, but you can't. So that's why there's no satisfaction. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is that the living entity, no matter how nice you make it, you know, it's just like, okay, well, we have a little screen, and well, if we get a bigger one, well, if we get, you know, 30, you know, if we get a 50, hey, I saw 108 inch screen. No, we got our own home theater. We got no. It doesn't matter. It's still, you can't enjoy. Right? It's moment as long as it's going, but it's moment that stops, then there's no contact, there's nothing there, there's no substance. So immediately it ends.
So it's entering into mind.
Yes, that's all it is. I mean, it's because the senses, they're dead matter. What do they care? You know what I'm saying? They just tell you if it's hot or cold, or, you know, rough or smooth. You know, it's not that the sense cares whether it's a rough rock or a smooth rock. It just doesn't care. It's the mind that cares. So we identify with it, and therefore we think I'm enjoying, I'm this, I'm that, I'm so many things, but actually we're none of that, and it just doesn't matter. You know, we think it matters, but it really just doesn't. You know what I'm saying? So only in the spiritual world, then you're actually dealing with spiritual senses, the spiritual mind, the spiritual intelligence. So then one is actually happening. So, yes. Oh, John.
So the phrase vicarious enjoyment is actually a misnomer?
Vicarious enjoyment means, but it's an actual principle. Like when you're happy seeing that the Lord and the devotees are interacting, they're happy, you're actually happy. So the principle is natural. Because basically the major aspect of our enjoyment is going to be vicarious.
Through others.
Yes, but it's going to be different from the concept of vicarious in that it's not that we're doing it to enjoy. You know, we're happy to see others, that they are engaged, that they are happy in doing all these things. That'll be the difference. But the principle that we're making arrangements and appreciating others enjoying, that's natural for us. You know, we see, if we're talking in terms of more, romantic concepts of emotion and qualities, then it's generally always vicarious. You know, the mother is very happy seeing the child is there, or, you know, the friend is happy to see his other friend that, you know, things are working out for him, or, you know, so many different things like that. It's always that you're happy that the other person is happy. Then we consider that a more noble kind of position. But the problem comes is that if people don't act on that noble platform, then the idea is that since we want to be happy, we think, then therefore I'll do it on my own. You know what I'm saying? If the leadership is not acting in a noble way, and so therefore people don't feel that kind of, proper care and all that, then that insecurity is going to break down also other aspects of their life, and they're naturally going to then look out for themselves and everything. So then the whole fabric falls apart. They don't have no knowledge. They don't have any shelter. So then the idea, if I do it myself, then that will be better. But the more they get into this, the less nice it gets. You know, you hear about nice things happening in you go back, you have to read in older kind of books and stuff, you know. That then you kind of hear about kind of stuff. And nowadays it's not really much, nowadays it's more, you know, action, exciting, you know, that kind of element to a suspense or some kind of intense emotion. But the noble qualities aren't the ones that are brought out, you know, that kind of, you know, doing something for a higher purpose, the element of sacrifice, the element of austerity, you know, these things aren't brought out. And so people actually don't, they don't even get, you know, the mundane, you know. It's like, so it's really sad, you know, it's really sad that, you know, you work so hard even for mundane enjoyment and don't get it, you know. So even the Vaishnavas feel bad about that, you know.
You know, the more we make ourselves the center, the more we really short circuit the whole principle of enjoyment.
Yes, yeah. Because our enjoyment's only when other, because we being part of Krishna, therefore, when he's happy, everything will be happy, and him and his energy are non-different. Right? So the difference is that the internal potency would never consider not serving Krishna. That's just the inherent nature. The jiva has that choice.
like that, that they could or not, because it's to add. They're there to add. You know, it's like the means. It's the, means the, you have the meal in itself. It's perfect, but it's all the little things around it. Just add, you know, the particular settings that are there, or you know, the lighting or the situation that you put it in, or little extras, you know, that are there, you know, on the table, and this from here and that from there. It means the meal could go perfect without them, right? You know, it means you could just, you know, put it down there on that, you know, little side, you know, table, you know, with the bench and the kitchen and the corner, and eat it, it would be fabulous. But you add all those others, it just makes it all. So that's who we are. We're the extras.
I'm not the center?
No, it just says we're the extras, like that. Yeah.
And that's why everybody's really dissatisfied, is more and more and more self-absorption, short-circuiting. It's like somebody winning a hot dog contest. You know, they can't even taste it. They're stuffing stuff.
Yeah. No, it's just it's crazy. It doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't work. But unfortunately, the living entity is so convinced, because it's just, it means a natural thing. Because if you're in the mood of Purusha, if you're in the center, it works. But we're not Purusha. But the fun part is that what we don't actually get is that technically, if you look at it in rasa, means as far as tattva, the arrangement goes, Krishna's in the center. But actually, as far as rasa goes, the energy's in the center. Right? Because that's where it's fun. Because for Krishna, he is the Purusha. So that's just the natural position. So someone else taking the position and leading that is more fun. You know, it's just like you have a party that you know about that has one flavor, but a surprise party has a different flavor. There's more closeness, more intimacy, more, you know, the unknown elements. So that's what, the Prakriti is the center. But we'll never be the center because we're an extension of Prakriti. So Prakriti being the center, but what we're trying to do is be the center, you know, and at the same time, we're trying to be the Purusha. So it's really weird. That's why it just doesn't work out. You can't be both at once. You know. So it's sad.
So therefore Krishna comes as Mahaprabhu because he has more money.
Yeah.
All right. So the only reason that the Shakti wouldn't like serving Krishna in rasa term.
No, but it's serving. That is serving. See, the Shakti is serving, but it's serving in a way to take care of the desires of how Purusha functions. See, because Purusha has a mentality. So Prakriti knows that mentality and so therefore acts in that way. You know, just like, let's say, how do you say? If there's a task to accomplish, if it is just so simple, right? Are you satisfied? No, you want some effort. You know, it took some intelligence, it took some effort. There might have been a few obstacles, but the point is you're able to work it out. Right? But it's challenging. That's what Purusha likes. Right? Prakriti doesn't like that. Prakriti just likes it just to happen. It means if they're going to do it, it should happen with zero obstacles. Better someone else does it. You know what I'm saying? So when it comes to actually sitting back and being the enjoyer, that's Prakriti, not Purusha. Purusha likes to get out there and work. You understand? So because of that, then Prakriti makes that work. You know what I'm saying? Makes the things, changes, creates the environment that there's something to do. You know what I'm saying? Krishna doesn't have to kill the demons, but it's fun. Right? Means the demons, I mean, they're very big for us, but for material energy, they're not big at all. You know what I'm saying? When all the demigods can't kill a demon, they call in Maya, she kills them. You know what I'm saying? So she can kill all the biggest demons. When it mentions these demons, you know, what was it?
Kutumba and Nitumba, or whatever they were. Sumba and Nisumba. You know, Maheshasura, you know, the buffalo demon, right? He just comes in and just, you know, moves Indra off his throne and sits down. And the demigods can't do anything about it. You know, Maya kills him. That's what the whole Durga Puja thing is. You know, she's on there and there. That's Maheshasura, the buffalo demon. You know, that's famous. So she can take care of him, no problem. You know what I'm saying? She can take, because, you know, Aristasura, all these, they're big around here, but they're not big in the heavenly planets. You don't hear them taking over the heavenly planets. But these guys that she kills, they take over the heavenly planets. They're way bigger demons. So for Krishna, it's just fun. You know what I'm saying? When he killed, Hiranyaksha, he just kicked him, you know, he just whacked him behind the ear, I think. That was it, you know? You know, it wasn't a big deal. So it's, you know, more the thing, the whole getting up there, the whole bravado, do the whole rasa. They're coming to kill him. That was easy. You know, Chanura Musti, just one kick, he's gone. But he doesn't even have to do that. His energy will do it. So for him, it's fun. So creating all these things is what the energy does. So Yoga Maya creates all these obstacles and different things and all that. But it's all for his pleasure, right? The same way as in the material world, because we're saying we're Purusha, so therefore Maya creates all the obstacles that Purusha would like. But we're not Purusha, so we don't like it, like I said. Prakriti doesn't like it. There should be no obstacles. You know what I'm saying? So that's the problem. Is we're playing the part like we're the man. You know, it's like the kid, you know, little girl dresses up, puts on a mustache, ties a turban on her head, this, that, walking around. You know, so the mother will make some arrangements, but you know, she still has to be very careful if she wants to keep her happy, to make arrangements how a girl would want the arrangements. You know, there has to be a little bit of something, but not too much, right? You know, like that, you know, because otherwise it just doesn't work. So that's the problem, is Krishna doesn't mind, right? He comes home and, you know, the girls are not talking to him, then that's okay, something to do. We come home and, why is it always like this? I've been working all day, you know, why they don't care? This is it. Like that, you know, that's female. Purusha's okay, let's do this, you know. You know what I'm saying? She really upset, okay, it takes her 3 days to get her to talk, okay, that was a real challenge, but we did it. You know? But nowadays, it's like, 3 days, it's like insane. Right, because we're Prakriti. And we're not even the controlling Prakriti. You know, we're the assistant Prakriti, so that's even more of a handicap. You know? You know? So that's a problem. Yeah.
We just had a great example in the New York area of how material nature can just take care of business. It was like 9/11 revisited, you know, when that superstorm came in.
It's fun how they call them girls, right? Sandy! Oh, Sandy! Sandy's gone.
I mean, it was, 9/11 was nothing compared to what nature did from, you know, basically the Connecticut shoreline all the way down to the bottom of New Jersey. And I know that area very well. And for years when I was visiting, you know, my former wife's relatives, I was thinking, these people working in New York, they're making their money in such simple ways. And they're living here in the Jersey Shore. You know, something's going to happen. Sure enough. You know, it was way worse than 9/11. You know, only just planes flying into buildings was nothing compared to these storms.
Yeah.
It was wild. And these people, they've never seen anything like it, and they're still like, you know, refugees walking around the shore in Staten Island.
Look at one of the benefits. You can swim in the subway now. You know? Before you can only walk around. You know, boring. Hey, you could go swimming. You know?
Didn't
take
much.
Yeah. No. So. Yeah. Okay. So the whole idea is that the jivas, as long as they're trying to enjoy, because the point is the servant's not supposed to enjoy the master, right?
The servant's supposed to assist the master so that he enjoys. Yeah. Right? Now, it can be more formal or more intimate. That's another thing. But the point is, it's the enjoyment of the master. Right? So now, if we're trying to enjoy the servant of the master, right, then they're not going to deal with this very well. But if we're assisting the servant of the master, then everything goes very nicely. Right? Because they're in a position of power. Right? So they take care. If we're assisting, they'll take care nice. Just like the master takes care of the servant will take care of the assistant. Right? But if we don't, we're bound by Maya. But if we assist, then we're free. So that's why we're saying the point of liberation is it's only a mindset. Yeah, right? Yeah. For the others, it's a big struggle and this and that and so many things. But all it is just, I'm not the controller and enjoyer. So automatically, I'm liberated. Because the jiva, that's the natural position. So when it's in an unnatural position to be conditioned, you're covered. So it's a matter of uncovering, right? You know, if I take a cloth and put it over this pot here, right? And then now it's bound, you know, and then I take the cloth off. Now it's liberated. No, it means the condition it's in now, it's always been in. All it is whether you cover it or not. The gold is exactly the same gold if you cover it with mud or don't. It's not that when I cover it with mud, it's no longer gold and doesn't have value. And then as soon as I take the mud off, it transforms into gold. That's what the idea. I will transform. No, it's just washing the dirt off. That's all. So that's why the Vaishnavas don't worry about. They don't. When we say we don't care about it, because it doesn't exist. It's nothing there. Does that make sense? You know, it's something non-existent. You know, it doesn't happen. You know, what's that? I'd probably use the example of something in the sky. Sky flowers. You know, the whole garden in the sky, if the wind blows, it'll ruin the garden in the sky. There isn't one. You know? So that's the thing. There is no such thing as liberation. All it is you give up the improper consciousness of thinking I'm the controller and enjoyer. When you give that up, you're actually liberated. So that's why we say that the impersonalists and others aren't actually liberated, because they still have that mentality. So all it is they're free from being controlled for the moment by the external energy, but they're not actually liberated. So real liberation is entering into the spiritual world in a relationship with the Lord. That's the only real room. There is no other liberation. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Digambar. Are you or are you not under a particular energy? Advaita Das, yes, we are Jiva Shakti. We have escaped from the influence of the illusory material Maya Shakti and taken shelter under the control of the transcendental absolute Chit Shakti. Digambar, that makes you Shaktas, the worshippers of Shakti too. Eh? So Advaita Das, yes, of course. Vaishnavas are the real Shaktas. That's the thing is they say they're Shaktas, but they're not actually. We're the real Shaktas, you know. Like that. We are under the patronage of Sri Radhika, the embodiment of the Chit Shakti. We worship Krishna, but under Sri Radhika's loving guardianship. Hence, who can claim to be more authentic Shaktas than us? It's the out-Shakta, the Shaktas, right? You know? Yeah, just like...
Their concept of Shakti worship, they worship her independent of Krishna?
Yes. Means they don't understand there's a Shakti man.
They don't acknowledge her existence at all?
No, not at all. Like that. Means he's there in a post, but he comes from her anyway.
So like they reverse the position.
They've reversed the positions. But the attributes are still a Shakti, but they don't catch that Shakti can't function without Shakti Ma. But at the same time, what's fun is after they become liberated, then they become Shakti Ma. They become the husband of Shakti. So all it is that no one else should be the Shakti Ma, right? You know.
But is it also that they think that Shakti is the Shakti Ma until they become the Shakti Ma?
Might be, but the point is but then no one else has become. The point is, why would you follow the path of Shakta worship unless it works, right? Because there's been people of doing this for thousands of years, so none of them have achieved the liberation. So if they have, that means there's already so many Shaktimans there. Yeah. So it's like, you know.
And if they haven't, why follow the process?
Yeah. So it doesn't exactly work out at this one. So. We do not see any differences between a true Shakta and a Vaishnava. However, those who worship only the Maya Shakti without taking complete shelter within the spiritual Chit Shakti are admittedly to some extent Shaktas, but cannot be considered Vaishnavas. Ultimately, they are gross materialists, right? So what we're saying is that those who accept the internal potency, they're actual Shaktas. Those who only accept Maya Shakti and not the Sarup Shakti, then they're kind of Shaktas to some extent. But they're not Vaishnavas, right? Vaishnavas means they're worshipping the internal potency. Right? If they worship the external potency, you can say they're Shaktas, but they're not Vaishnavas. But basically, they're gross materialists because they don't actually even worship the Shakti for the Shakti's pleasure. They worship for their own pleasure. So technically, they're just materialists. Digambar, Shakti is the ultimate. There is nothing beyond her. You are born through Shakti, and you will return to Shakti. Right? That may be us, right? But what about where Shakti comes? Just like if we're born from Shakti and go back to Shakti, that means something's coming. Shakti has to come from somewhere. So that means Shakti has to be a point. Now, we don't say that there's another Shakti and another Shakti. Otherwise, Vaisheshika and Shankara, Shankya say, is then you have this unlimited regression. What? Infinite regression. It'll just keep going. So it has to stop somewhere. So then they'll just stop it at Shakti. But the point is no, the natural place to stop it is at Shaktiman. You know, and then you don't ask, well, where does Shaktiman come from? And then do the same thing. Right? Because that's natural. Shakti comes from Shaktiman. So when you get back to that, there is the supreme Shaktiman. Not there's the supreme independent Shakti. Right? So yeah.
Aristotle gives an analogy with the war. There's a war, you're retreating. I mean, you have to stop at some point and fight. Otherwise, it's not a war, it's just a retreat. So,
well, you retreat enough until you get back around until you meet him again, and then you fight. But if they follow, then yeah, that would be a problem.
To that point.
Yeah, you have to come back, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's good. Okay. One must begin by serving Shakti. Behold the power of Shakti in material science. Diligently improve your yogic strength, because by that you will see there is nothing but the unmanifest Shakti. Right? But the point is if the power of Shakti in material science is so nice, why would you care about unmanifest Shakti? Because the manifest is so good. Why would you care about unmanifest? You know, if this is so nice, why would you want to get liberated? You know what I'm saying? It's just, it doesn't make sense. You know. Whence did you manufacture the phantasmagoria about this conscious supreme controller known as Ishvara? Unless they talk in very big, fancy, insulting language. I say, by believing in these stories, you are forced to experience hardships at the present. And who can guarantee that you will gain more than us after death? What business do you have with a divine male factor, a Purusha, right? Even though they want to become a divine male factor, right? Simply surrender to Shakti. You can merge into her and thus eternally exist in her. But if it's so great, then why is that greater than the interaction, right? Because if the interaction is nice, why would the non-interaction be nice, right? It's the interaction's not nice, so non-interaction's nice. Right? It's cold outside, therefore coming in it's warm, it's nice, you know? You know what I'm saying? You know, it says like, you know, you're outside, oh, it's so cold outside, come inside, it's also just as cold here. It's kind of like, you know, like that, you know. Oh, you're hungry? Come, sit down, we're also hungry. Well, we can all be hungry together, you know? And it's like, you know, it's like
Advaita Das. Dear friend, I see that you are captivated by the material energy. Moreover, suppose the Chaitanya Purusha actually exists. Then what will your future be after a lifetime of ignoring him? Right? Because they're saying, well, what will you gain that we won't gain? His point is, but if he is there, then what is going to be later, right? You know? Yeah, that was Prabhupada's point to the Walla in Russia. Right? You know, it's just, you know, okay, at the time of death, we'll see who's right. Right? You know, he's definitely going to be shocked. In addition, kindly consider what is the actual happiness of this present life. I would say that satisfaction and peace of mind are real happiness. Yes, I have rejected all material pleasures, but now I experience a real inner happiness. And if there is eternality beyond this life, then by his grace I shall have that also. Right, so the other one was saying that we're enjoying now because of material science and facilities and all that. And afterwards, after death, because we worship Shakti, we'll merge into Shakti and we'll be happy. But you guys got nothing. You know, you're renounced now and you're not enjoying the world. And then afterwards, you're not worshiping Shakti, so what are you going to have? You know. But he's pointing out, no, it's because you can enjoy the material world. We're satisfied, so we're actually happy now. And then because we're worshiping the Lord, then we'll be happy afterwards. Right. On the other hand, you are not at all peaceful and contented, even presently. The more you seek carnal pleasures, the more your thirst for them increases. You have never really understood what real happiness actually is. Chasing after the pleasures of the flesh, one day you will certainly plunge deeply into an ocean of grief. Digambar, we shall see what happens to me. But first, tell me why you have left the sophisticated culture milieu. Advaita Das, I have not discarded the cultured society. In fact, that is what I have actually gained. And now I am busy avoiding the uncultured lot. So, amongst the uncultured, some are more sophisticated and some are less. So the ones who are more sophisticated consider their culture. Right, because they're not actually cultured, they can't appreciate that those who are actually cultured are cultured. Right? Digambar, what do you understand by uncultured? Right. So if it's Australian, it means no yogurt has been added. Right? Okay. Yes. Advaita Das, please do not get angry. Listen to what Srimad Bhagavatam 4:30-33 states. Dear Lord, as long as we have to remain within this material world, as a result of our material contamination, and wander from one type of body to another, and from one planet to another, we pray that we may associate with those who are engaged in discussing your pastimes. We pray for this benediction life after life, in different bodily forms and on different planets. Okay, footnote 20. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to this verse, this is the best benediction that a devotee can ask of the Lord. This is also confirmed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Stane stita shruti gama tanu van manobihi. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:14:3. One may be in one position or another according to destiny, but in any case, one must continue to hear about the activities and pastimes of the Supreme Lord, regardless of circumstances. A pure devotee does not pray for liberation or for cessation of the cycle of birth and death, because he does not consider that important. The most important thing for a devotee is getting a chance to hear about the pastimes and glories of the Lord. The devotees who engage in the service of the Lord in this world will have the same opportunity in the spiritual world also. Thus, for a devotee, everything is in the spiritual world, for as long as he can hear about the pastimes of the Lord, or whatever he can chant, the Lord is personally present. Or wherever he can chant, the Lord is personally present. Tatra tishtami narada yatra gayanti madbhakta. When the pure devotees assemble to chant, hear and talk about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the place where they assemble becomes Vaikuntha. For the devotee, there is no need to pray to the Lord for transferal to the Vaikuntha world. A pure devotee can create Vaikuntha or Vrindavan anywhere simply by chanting the glories of the Lord without offense. So wherever one is, there is the association of devotees, and therefore the discussions about the Lord's pastimes. Right, the Lord's, the knowledge, the, how you say, yeah, just discussions about the Lord. So name, form, qualities, and pastimes. Then that place is spiritual. Because what defines something as material is it's not connected to the Lord. That's the actual material definition. Right? So it doesn't matter whether you're situated in the inferior or in the superior energy. You're always in the spiritual world. Right? Because material, as we define, means you're not seeing Krishna connected to it. Right? In the Hari Bhakti Vilas 10.2.94, it is said, one should never associate with people who are absorbed in non-reality, for by such company one is deprived of all worthwhile objects of attainment and falls down to a degraded position. You see, Digambar, it is most inauspicious for the jiva to associate with such spiritually destitute persons. What can be the benefit of living in the society of such despicable company? Right? Yeah. Digambar, imagine, we came to meet you as a decent gentleman. However, according to you, we have become a coarse and uncouth cripple. Just as well, kindly stay here and associate with your, quote, unquote, pure Vaishnavas. I am returning to my home. Advaita Das could see that the exchange was concluding and thought it best to finish with some kind parting words. He said, you must go home, but you are my childhood friend, seen again after such a long time. I do not feel like letting you go. You have so kindly come to see me. Will you not stay a little longer and take prasadam with us? Right. His point before was that means you have the element you have the spiritual dealings, and that means you deal on the, discussing nicely the philosophy and all that. And then you have the social dealings. So social dealings, whether someone is a theist or an atheist, it doesn't matter. Social dealings remain the same. They remain proper, appropriate for the situation, right? You don't get more intimate than is appropriate. You don't get more formal than is appropriate. It's just whatever is the appropriateness for that situation. That's socially how you deal, right? And as we remember before, it's that he's coming and saying all these things. It's not really worthwhile discussing. He's not thinking that it will get anywhere, right? Because the Shakti, if you don't accept the Supreme Lord, it's going to be very difficult to establish, right? If there's there, but we see the arrogance that's there. It's not, the mode of ignorance is so strong. They're not actually looking. He didn't come to look. So his idea is, okay, then I'll say something, but I won't work on the principle of trying to persuade him. I'll work on the principle of just explaining the absolute truth properly. Pleasantly, but properly. And if he appreciates it, great. And if he doesn't, he'll go away. And it won't, then he'll, this bad association will end. Right? Because he's definitely we can see a gross materialist. So, he's spoken. It's come to the conclusion that now we can see his Digambar doesn't have anything to refute him. All it is he's just now saying, okay, you Vaishnavs are, so much an illusion, it's not even worth discussing. Right? I came, I tried, so now I'm going. Digambar, Brother Kalidas, you know that I cannot digest any outside food. Besides, I eat only havishya, sacrificial food, and I have already taken before I came here. Indeed, I was very glad to see you and will come again when I have some leisure time. I cannot spend the night here because I must perform certain disciplines handed down to me by my guru, so I will take my leave now. Right? So all kinds of, social things that, very important, and so he can't do it. I only take sacrificial food. That means it's offered to Kali, right? Yeah. But he was saying before, we eat meat, we eat this, we eat that, so what do you enjoy?
But he didn't say, no, we're only taking, we're only, you know, doing our sadhana, we're taking the remnants like this, so you're doing the, you know, you take of your deity, we're taking of our deity. No, he was presenting it purely, we wear fancy clothes, we do it like this. So now we see it's all just nice, nice ways of, you know, it's just, when I get some leisure time, he'll never have leisure time, right? So, Advaita Das, come, I will accompany you to your boat. Digabar, no, no, it's all right. Continue with your work. I have a few persons along with me. With these parting words, Digambar walked quickly away, humming to himself a song about Kalima. Advaita Das quietly went back to his kutir. He sat down peacefully and began to chant Krishna Nam. Yes.
So Maharaj, actually, Advaita Das is making the point that to be a Shakta is like this friend Digambar, is like sense gratification only.
Yeah, totally for sense gratification. Karma and jnana are only for sense gratification. Whether you want to enjoy the external energy or you want to enjoy being not under the control of the external energy, either one of those, it's for enjoyment.
But here you said quite strongly that it's mainly looking for the pleasure of the flesh.
So yes, gross, yes. Gross. Yeah, no, it's gross. That's what he said, the gross materialists. The Shaktas are gross materialists. Like that. But they're willing to follow some regiment and follow according to scripture. It means if they're proper, which puts them in a superior position than just an ordinary sense gratifier. Because at least they have guru, they have discipline, they have a deity, right? They accept scripture, they have a method. So in that way, there's a superior element. But within the Vedic, it's, you know, basically your lowest level, right? Because it's on the platform anamoy. It's just the senses and the sense objects. It doesn't even get up to pranamoy, right? So it's on the lowest level. So that's why you see that the discussion was also moving back and forth between the Shakta and modern science. Because modern science is also on the sensual platform. Does that make sense? So science is it's in line with the Veda, but it's still on the platform of the senses. So modern, but it means you're seeing the connection between it as a science and the Lord, right? So that's Vedic science. When you cease to see the connection between the science and the Lord, the same science that becomes material science. That's all, the same knowledge, it's not different. So that means you can have an Ayurvedic doctor who's actually dealing with Vedic, you know, knowledge. But you can have another Ayurvedic doctor who's not seeing its connection with the Lord, and they're a gross materialist. So they're actually dealing with ignorance. Mm-hmm. Like that. So that's the thing, is it's the whole trick is it connected to the Lord or it's not? That's the only differentiation. You understand? If it's connected to the Lord, and we see that the Lord is eternal, His form is eternal, then that's actually transcendental. We accept the Lord, but don't accept that His form is eternal, then it's still mundane. It may be situated in goodness mundane, but it's still mundane. Right? So these are more of ignorance mundane. Right? And then before, he was talking before with the Chattopadhyay, that's mode of goodness mundane. Right? Because they're worshipping Vishnu deity and everything like that. So, you know, that's the fun part, is all his other relatives and everything, they're worshippers of Vishnu. But they're smartest, so they're interested in liberation. But somehow or another he considers them cultured. Right? You know, so, you know, you know, so then socially they're the same, but because they're both materialists. But, you know, one's working through goodness, one through ignorance. You know, so that's, therefore, you see the attitude is so much greater, right? The other ones were respectful, but very sharp on the Shastric things, just saying, you're not understanding the Shastra, you're misrepresenting, or this. But he's just saying, oh, you're just, you know, he just says so many nasty things. It's the mode of ignorance. Yes.
Maharaj, you mentioned that the Shakti doesn't like obstacles when it takes on the role of Purusha.
Yes.
And Purusha sees it as a challenge.
No, it's just Shakti doesn't like obstacles. No, I'm saying Shakti doesn't like obstacles.
Yes, yes.
It means it's just like this.
Yes.
you want to get something done. When will you get it done? It means you start today. So later today or tomorrow, you'll get it done, right? Okay, but the feminine aspect, when should it, when they want it now, when should it actually have been done?
Yesterday.
You understand? That's the point. Okay? So that's what we're saying. Now, that's the fun part. When Shakti then takes on the mood of Purusha, then you get this mix that there's the element that you want that little bit of excitement, but at the same time, it basically should go as you like it. So only how much you like it to go. But the point is she's not your servant. So how much Krishna likes what obstacle he likes, that's how much the internal potency provides. But for us, it's according to your karma. Right? So if you have good karma, it'll go the way you like. You have bad karma, it's not going to go the way you like. Right? Because the feminine nature is also just. What you deserve is what you get. You know what I'm saying? So you have all these mixes of things. That's why it's a perversion. The mechanics are not different than the spiritual world. Right? What's different is the mentality. Right? Mother Yashoda, when she cooks, she takes things and puts them into pots and puts a pot on the fire and pushes it around with a spoon. Right? It's the same mechanics. The difference is the mentality. She's cooking for Krishna. That's real. Here, they're cooking for their own child. That's illusion. It's a reflection, perverted reflection. So the reflection's the same. The perversion's the mentality. Now, if you give up the Vedic, then the reflection becomes perverted also. You know what I'm saying? The mother's there cooking for the child. That's the perverted reflection, because she thinks this is my child. And you know, then she's enjoying this like that. When she, you know, on her way, the kid's walking in, or as the kid's sitting on the couch, then, you know, the mom, nicely dressed and all that, you know, she's going out the door, says, you know, dinner's in the microwave, you just have to push the button. You know, she goes out the door. That's the perversion of the perversion. Does that make sense? Yeah. Nice.
So you mentioned that for Purusha, he sees obstacle as a challenge.
Yes.
Yeah, like this.
So if we don't see it as a challenge, then that means that's feminine. And then feminine. Two females get along? So that's why there's a fight. You know what I'm saying? So unless one can establish themselves as the senior female and the other one submits, it doesn't work.
So that means Shakti will never see obstacles as a challenge. Yeah. Shakti will never see an obstacle as a challenge.
Shakti won't see an obstacle as a challenge. Generally speaking, no.
Yeah.
You know, for themselves, they don't mind a challenge for someone else. They know it'll be hard work. Let's say you want to arrange a program for somebody, a party or something nice. They don't mind taking the challenge because of the rasa. See, the man takes it, it's not rasa. You're dealing with that. You're taking something and making it happen. It's not that you have a relationship with that. It's just you take and transform situations. That's what men like to do. Women want to experience the transformation. You know what I'm saying? It's a difference. You know what I'm saying? So as long as if an obstacle is there, as long as it doesn't inhibit the experience of the transformation, it's fine. You know what I'm saying? There's another thing that means if you want to get more subtle, but it's not, we don't have really time to go into it, is what you also miss in here is that men like to deal with obstacles, right? Women don't like to deal with obstacles. Why? Because women are obstacles. You understand? They are. By nature, they create their non-different than them. You understand? But the point is they like to create obstacles, and they like to have the obstacle gotten over, but it's you're the one that has to make it happen. You understand?
How are women obstacles?
It's their nature. You want to do this? What's the answer? What's the first answer?
No.
No. oh, but it would be nice, it would be this, that. Well, maybe, you know, we'll think about it. They are the experience of obstacle. That's why they don't really like, if they're in control of the obstacles, they don't mind. But that's why they don't, other women are a problem, because they're also obstacles.
So like they're pessimistic. And then
No, you're missing the whole point. The point is rasa, experience. Right? It's like this. If obtaining something was so good, right? The man, the masculine situation is in sambandha. Sambandha is represented by the sat principle, which means eternality. So he's attained something, then he thinks forever he's going to get the benefits of this. He did something nice for the wife, now forever he should be reaping the benefits. But is that how it works? No, because the wife knows, okay, that was worth 2 days of being nice. Or it was really good 3 days of being nice, you know. It's not going to get any better than that. Right? Why? They won't talk to you for 3 days. So that's as bad as it gets. So that means 3 days is as good as it'll get. It's balanced. It's equal. Does that make sense? So the point is, they don't think of that as eternal. You should eternally be having experiences. So that means if by accomplishing something, it was so good, then doing it again will also be good. So that's why it moves forward, and the man thinks it's here, and then the woman moves it back to there. So the man gets upset because he's thinking it should go from here to there. No, she just wants it to be, you know, so it was great. So you know, you ever seen like on music, there's the loop, right? It was nice, so you listen to it again. You listen, where do you start? You don't play it backwards, like that. You play it, you know, start at the beginning. You understand? So that's just how it works. So for them, it's the experience. It's a whole different thing. We're talking rasa here. You can't look at the position of women by the men's mentality of accomplishing something that this is what doing. It's a matter, you're not accomplishing something. It's you're experiencing something. Right? The man wants to do something with that something. The woman wants to experience something from that something. If it doesn't give an experience, what's the meaning? You understand? Man's hungry, you know, there's nothing else around, but it doesn't taste good, he'll eat it. Woman, if it doesn't, she won't eat it. Where's the experience? There's a difference. So the point is, the difference is what creates rasa. So when you transfer it into accomplishment, just physical accomplishment of something visible, then that doesn't work for anybody. Because for the jiva, it won't work, because he's not Purusha. And for women, it won't work, because there's no experience. So then women trying to be men, it's even more of a non-experience. You know what I'm saying? So the experience is between themselves. You know what I'm saying? Oh, look, it means it's just like the women are dressing not for the men, it's for the women. Right? Because women could wear anything and the men would be impressed. Right? So the point is they're impressing other women. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. So, therefore, the point of women acting as men is just to impress the other women. You know, just like, oh, you look so attractive, you know, and the other one, oh, that's so masculine. That's all. But it's masculine that it looks good. It's not, it means if the woman has a butch haircut, it's a good-looking butch haircut. You know? It wasn't you just take a buzzer and buzz it off. No, you go down to the saloon and get it buzzed nicely. It's a good-looking butch. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, it's a custom Harley. It's not just a Harley. Does that make sense? You know? Like that. It's rasa is important. So that's what we're saying. You can never, the feminine nature, it's inherent. The masculine nature is inherent. So we take on those qualities, but the jiva can't be satisfied because it's not his position to be the Purusha. Because in the material world, even in the form, the feminine form, they're taking the form of Purusha Shakti, which is the enjoying Shakti, but they can still only do it through feminine nature. Right? So when you take Purusha Shakti and then put it into trying to act as a Purusha, then it gets weird. So that, yeah, so without training, you can't do it. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So Maharaj, in his purport to Gita 2.16, Prabhupada, there's a line, it's very interesting, Prabhupada, I forget the whole line, but Prabhupada talks about superior and inferior natural sequence, and it sounds like what you're talking about, the mechanics.
Yeah.
There's sequence here, and there's sequence there. But here the sequence always ends in death.
Yes.
And there, like when you were talking about the men and the women, I was thinking, okay, so the woman's playing hard to get.
Right.
And the man's frustrated. But in the spiritual world, Radha's playing hard to get. And there's, because it's, the touch of everything's in the proper order versus the Purusha.
Yeah.
It's another ecstasy.
Yeah, yes.
So that, in that way, the mechanics are the same.
But the same.
The reality, yeah, is ecstatic. It's, yeah, not frustration.
No, that's why if you want to understand what's going on here, you have to understand what's going on there. Like that. It's rasa. That's why here people talk about so much relationships, but they actually have no idea what they're talking about, because it's actually just philosophy. It's tattva, how it works. People say, no, it's not. You can't just, no, it's just facts.
Yeah.
The point is, there it's eternal. Here, it's, even if you work it out, at some point, you know, people get old and you die. So then it's going to be a frustration. Even if you can make it run nicely, it's still not going to be. Even if you're super pious and everything works nice, still everybody dies. You know? So it's not good. You know? So, but in the spiritual world, no one dies. No one gets old. So it always works out. Plus, they have all the good qualities. Because the point is if it's not working out nicely, it's, the man's humble and he's determined. Right, he's committed. It will always work out. The woman wants it to work out. She's just putting that test to just test the flavor, the rasa. And she wants the man to pass it. Otherwise, if she didn't think he was, why would she make the endeavor? You know, by nature, if it's not going to give a result, women aren't going to do anything. Right. So the point is that then why would they make the endeavor to test if the man cares, if they didn't want him to pass? You know what I'm saying? So the point is if they follow the rules that it says in Shastra, then you always pass, and then it always works out. So here, but people, because they have a different, I want to enjoy, and I want to enjoy by it happens the way I want. That's how we've defined happiness, is it happens the way I want. Therefore, one gets frustrated. In the spiritual, it's happening according to how I want it to work out for you, which means how you would like it. It's a different definition. Therefore, they can be happy. So here, even if you get what you want, it's so much work. After a while, you get tired. You know? So, but it's designed that way, because then you get tired, then all those good qualities you should have had when you were young, then at least you develop them when you're old. And then next life you'd be a little more pious, and then you'll get them. And then when you have all the facilities, then you become degraded, and then you lose them, so then you become sinful. It's bad. But the point is the mechanics of it work exactly the same. They're God's laws, and it doesn't matter who says what. It's not going to be different. The mechanics are the same. People will say, well, in the modern world, but it's not working as we started out. It's not working. The mom's at the spa, you know, the daughter's, you know, on her, you know, texting and all that, and the, you know, kid's in the other room playing on his video game, and the father's out playing golf or something like that, but they're not, nobody's happy. They can say, oh, it's all great. It's not working. It's not.
I love Krishna's line, Nityam Jogya Pratishtitam. Consequently, the ultimate transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice.
Yeah.
It's about giving, not about,
yeah,
making.
Yeah. One place Prabhupada defines sacrifice as voluntarily giving up the results of your endeavor for someone else's happiness.
Yeah.
So that's all anybody does in the spiritual world.
Yeah.
Yeah. So an austerity means to do your duty. What's your duty? Mother Yashoda always does Mother Yashoda stuff. She doesn't decide one day she's going to come out with the Cowherd Boys. Like that, you know. It's just, she always does her stuff. The Cowherd Boys always do there. The cows always do there. So everyone does it, but they do it spontaneously. So we have this idea, spontaneous means I'm not bound by any fixed position or rules or that. That's called the mode of ignorance. It's called whim. But that's the problem with the mode of ignorance. One can't tell the difference between what's right and wrong. So that's the thing. The laws bind anybody, you know, unless one acts outside of, you know, under the direction of the spiritual master. Okay, summary of chapter 10. The age and history of Nitya Dharma. Harihara Bhattacharya was a professor residing in Agradweep. He had accepted initiation into Vaishnava Dharma and was engaged in the worship of Bhagavan Sri Krishna in his home. But a doubt arose in his mind about Vaishnavism, which he could not dispel even after speaking to many people about it. In fact, such talk only agitated his mind further. One day, Harihara went to the village of Arkatila and questioned the learned scholar of logic, Sri Chaturbhuj Nyaya Ratna. Sri Bhattacharya Mahashai, I have heard that the famous debater from Vikramapur, Sri Tarka Chudamani, proclaimed that the Vaishnava religion is very recent and has no philosophical substance. He said that only low-class people become Vaishnavas. High-class people do not respect Vaishnava Dharma. It's so much about their so-called sophisticated culture and respect. Right? But I'm saying it's all pervading. It's not just these guys. It's just here it's because they understand, so they fully commit themselves to it. So therefore, it seems exaggerated, but it's what everybody would do if they could get away with it. Like that. When I first heard such conclusions from a scholar of his stature, it somewhat pained my heart. But then I thought it over. It occurred to me that no Vaishnava Dharma existed anywhere in Bengal prior to the appearance of Sri Chaitanya Dev. Before that, everyone worshipped Goddess Durga and recited the Shakti mantras. Granted, there were a few Vaishnavas like ourselves who worship by reciting Vaishnava mantras, but everyone's goal was ultimately to attain Brahma and Mukti. And to this end, they diligently applied themselves. So here we can see, as Wendy said, there were a few Vaishnavas like ourselves who worship by reciting Vaishnava mantras, but their goal was Brahma and Mukti. So that meant smartas. So in other words, basically speaking, all the smartas in Bengal were Shaktas, right? But a few of them were Vaishnavas. They'll categorize themselves that way. It means they're worshiping Vishnu. But technically, as we know, that's Prambi Pratibimba Bhakti. So it's not actually real bhakti, because they don't acknowledge the eternal form of the Lord, right? That's what makes for the Kanista Adhikar. He accepts that, right? So that's what differs him from the other worship, so-called worshippers, is they don't accept the eternal form, so it's not actually real. But for the Kanista, he accepts the form as eternal, so therefore it's real bhakti. Does that make sense? But he doesn't necessarily see all the activities as purely spiritual. Right? Means I'm doing something, I get the spiritual benefit, but I also want material benefit. Right? So that's why it was defined that the spiritual activities are actually secondary for the neophyte. The faith in the Lord, that's primary. But the activities are secondary. They're supportive of that faith. But the activities themselves are actually spiritual, so when he understands them as purely spiritual, then that is the Madhyama platform. Right? Because then they see the activity only for the pleasure of the Lord, so it's purely spiritual. So then it becomes the primary activity. Then the secondary activity becomes the qualities of worshipping the Lord, friendship with the devotees, compassion of the innocent, avoiding the atheist. Right? And then for the Uttamas, they don't make even that distinction. So for them, everybody's serving the Lord. So there is only primary quality. There is no secondary qualities. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's just a matter of how much it's applied. In other words, the faith in the Lord is the main quality. But the point is then how that's applied in the devotional service. So the devotional service is you want something from it, you don't want something from it, and you don't see anybody else as separate from that whole process. So then that's what makes the difference between the neophyte, the madhyam, the uttam, right? So here is that when they're talking about this, they're talking about technically those who are actually below. They're not even neophytes, right? Technically. It's the shadow of a devotee. It's not actually real devotion, right? Because the neophyte's a devotee. Like that. In the type of Vaishnav Dharma into which we were initiated, everyone approved of the Panchopasana system. Right? Because that's where you're worshipping Vishnu, you're worshipping Shiva, Ganesh, Shakti, and the sun god. So they're worshipping Vishnu there. And so depending upon which of the five was your prominence, you were defined as that. So if Shakti was the prominent, you were a Shakta. If Shiva was the prominent of the five, then you were a Shaiva. Right? If the sun god was the prominent, then you'd be, Surya. You know? Like that. If Ganesh, Ganapatya, right? And if Vishnu, you were Vaishnav. So, in other words, it was this, the smartest, they follow Panchopasana. Now, it's just which of the deity is prominent, that's all. But they worship all five, but one's prominent. Right? So, depending on the family line. But, that, the worship of Vishnu is in the mode of goodness. You're simply seeing him as the perfect manifestation, the topmost platform of goodness. But you don't think the form is eternal, because then you're going to go beyond that into liberation. So that's why technically they're not devotees. But generally, on one level, much of the time it's easy for them to appreciate actual Vaishnava Dharma and take it up. But sometimes it's not. And so then... But after...
Everyone in India is using this Panchopasana system.
In India, this is the Vedic system. That's why they in Brahma Samhita it talks about Panchopasana. It goes through, it doesn't separate it, but it goes through Ganesh, everybody, and tells everybody where they get their power from and everything. So you see, it always goes back to Krishna.
And in Meghani,
Shakta was prominent, but there'd be some Vaishnava. While in other parts, there would be more Vaishnava might be there, or more Shaiva would be there. Like that. But here it's mainly Shakta, not even Shaiva. Mm. You know, north more Shaiva and Vishnu. Mm. South Shaiva and Vishnu. Mm. You know, a bit of Shakti also the other, but it's kind of reversed. Here it's the other. But after Chaitanya, in the type of Vaishnav Dharma into which we were initiated, because he says he was initiated in Vaishnava Dharma, worship Krishna. Right? Everyone approved of the Panchopasana system, but after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time, Vaishnava Dharma assumed a new outlook, and now Vaishnavas cannot even bear to hear the words Mukti and Brahma. Oh, Brahma. I can't even say what they think bhakti is. Well, as they say, a one-eyed cow often strays from the herd. That applies perfectly to modern Vaishnavas. Right? I guess if your eye's on the wrong side, right, then you wander off. Yeah. So my question is, did this type of Vaishnav Dharma exist previously, or has it only appeared since the time of Chaitanya Dev? Upon realizing that Harihara's standpoint was not that of a fanatic Vaishnava, the face of Sri Chaturbhuj immediately lit up. He said, Harihara, I support your views. The present rise of this fledgling Vaishnav Dharma is intimidating, and one cannot even speak out against it openly. Right? Because he was thinking he was one of the, you know, the Navadvip Vaishnavas, you know, so they're the fanatics. But he's actually one of the nice, smarter Vaishnavas, you know, so they're not so fanatic, right? Because the principles are the same. That means they prefer, the family line is so to be our tradition as Vaishnava. But the point is all of them want liberation. Right? And to enjoy whatever they can now. That's right. Right? And it's intimidating because the Vaishnavas actually have answers to whatever you have to say. They're talking Vedanta. Well, they're not. They're only dealing with some other Vedic viewpoints. And you never know actually how much they're situated. You know. Remember, this is Kali Yuga. One must be very cautious. Many rich gentlemen have been highly influenced by the philosophy of Chaitanya and have joined his ranks. They disrespect us greatly and even consider us as their enemies. Right? We generally know, we're talking about smartas, but generally for us, we know them as caste Goswamis. I dare say they will soon eliminate us. Traders and members of other business communities have started to hold dissertations and discussions upon the scriptures. Right? Traders means businessmen. Certainly a cause of consternation for the Brahmana caste, right? Because the Brahmins, they will follow Panchopasana. But the Vaishnava Dharma means, according to Chaitanya Dev, anybody can follow. Because before it was only Vaishnavas could do it, right? Only Brahmanas could do it. Regrettably, Navadvipa is now not such a nice place as it was. It has certainly deteriorated, especially in the area of Garai Gacha. Some Vaishnavas are living there, and they act as if the world belonged to them. Right? It's so amazing. And we'll be talking about them exactly the same way. Right? A few of them are very learned scholars, and their preaching is causing chaos among the common folk. They are destroying our land and discouraging people from believing in the eternal Mayavadi philosophy and the worship of devas and devis, demigoddesses. Soon this religious culture and practice will disappear. Have you not seen the definite decline in the elaborate performance of Shraddha and other Brahminical observances? How will the officiating priests maintain their families without the income from these observances? You know, they have to be practical.
Yeah.
Harihara replied, "Well, Mahatmaji, is there no solution or reprisal for this situation? There are still a few famous learned pundits in Mayapur. In addition, across the Ganga and Kulia village, there are several scholars of Smriti and Nyaya. What if we were to band together and collectively lay siege upon the Vaishnavas of Garai Gacha?" Externally, Sri Chaturbhuj Nyayaratna did not display the nagging fear in his mind. And he's Nyayaratna, right? So he's the jewel of logic.
Yeah.
But he's worried. Namely, that perhaps a place where Krishna Chudamani and others had been humbled might also become his own place of devastation. He said, "Harihara, I will go disguised, and you will take the position of being a leading teacher. You will start the debate and set the assembly ablaze with blistering arguments. Then I shall take over." Because if it doesn't go well, then he can just kind of quietly disappear, because he's not one of the main players here. Harihara, bristling with confidence, exulted, "I am fully prepared to follow your instructions. Next Monday we will cross the Ganga in the name of Mahadev and lay siege there in Garai Gacha." Monday arrived, and the three professors, Harihara, Kamalakanta, and Sadashiva, met Sri Chaturbhuj Narayana, Nyayaratna, at his home in Arkatila, and escorted him across the Ganga to Godrum. At 4 in the afternoon, they arrived at the Madhavi Grove, exclaiming, "Haribol, Haribol," having a mood like Durvasa Muni, surrounded by his followers. Advaitadas Babaji quietly appeared, welcoming them graciously, and seated them upon comfortable straw mats. He inquired, "How may we help you?" Haridas spoke up, saying, "We have come to discuss certain subjects with the Vaishnavas." Advaitadas Babaji quickly said, "The Vaishnavas here shy away from arguments," right? Because it says we come to discuss subject with the Vaishnavas, means you're not yourself, right? So automatically that means debate. We haven't come here to ask some questions. We haven't just come here to discuss Vaishnava, so to deepen our understanding. All these other... No, we've come here to discuss something. Right? The Vaishnavas here shy away from arguments, but if you have sincere queries, that would be nice.
The other day, a few scholars came pretending to be genuine seekers, but only bombarded us with a barrage of verbiage. Bombarded us with a barrage of verbiage. That's interesting. In the end, they had to retreat, crestfallen and nursing their battered pride. You just throw that out. I mean, they came here, they discussed, yeah, but they kind of had to, you know, like that. Hey, so, you know. Therefore, let me ask the permission of Sri Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji. He disappeared into the cottage of Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji Maharaj. Shortly afterwards, Advaita Das Babaji returned and went around spreading more sitting mats. Soon, Sri Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji arrived, offered his prostrate obeisances, first to the Tulsi plant, then to the visitors, and finally took a seat. Hands folded, he asked his guests, "Kindly say, how may we serve you?" Pandit Chaturbhuja said, "We have a couple of questions we would like to have answered." Immediately, Sri Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji called for Vaishnav Das Babaji. The latter came and, taking stock of the situation, sat down quickly. Because right? You can tell how they're dressed and their attitude and everything, that, you know, who they are. So as soon as he understood the mood, right? In other words, it's one thing is they had some questions. It might have been something simple like that, just some bewilderment or that. So then he could answer himself. But you could see, you know, these people want to argue. Okay, so let's call Vaishnav Das, right? Because he's the Nyayas, so, you know, they want to have some fun, right? Because the local pundits here, okay, you know, they were something. But it wasn't until Lord Chaitanya that Navadvipa became the seat of learning. Before that was Varanasi, right? So if you were schooled in Varanasi and you were a leader in Varanasi, the Navadvipa pundits are going to be pretty simple. Just on that platform, then you add, you know, the Vaishnava Vedanta, you know, Siddhanta. When everyone is properly settled, Chaturbhuja asked, "Is the Vaishnava Dharma modern or is it primordial?" Sri Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji's imperceptible urging nod gave Vaishnav Das Babaji the signal, and so he said, "The all auspicious Vaishnav Dharma is Sanatana, ever existent, and Nitya, eternal." Chaturbhuj Nyayaratna, "I see that the Vaishnav Dharma is of two kinds. One kind professes that Brahman is Nirakar. However, as the Nirakar cannot be worshipped, therefore an imaginary form is constructed, and by the worship of this imaginary form, the consciousness is purified. The mythical image of Radha and Krishna, of Rama or Nrisimha, is worshipped, and thereby one gradually becomes enlightened with the knowledge of Nirakar Brahman, the formless supreme. When one's consciousness is thus purified, then the impersonal nature of Brahman is realized. Amongst the Panchopasanas, those who worship the Murti of Vishnu and meditate on a specific Vishnu mantra, with this understanding, introduce themselves as Vaishnavas." So he's saying this is one kind of Vaishnavism. So those who follow this, they call themselves Vaishnavas, because technically they are worshipping the deity of Vishnu. But their point is that Brahman has no qualities. So if it has no qualities, there's nothing to worship. Right? But even just saying Nirakar is a quality, right? Because according to logic, then it's a quality in the negative. Right? By it not being there, it's a negative. You come and, you know, it's time for lunch, and you come and sit down, and there's nothing to eat. You know, so in the negative, then you understand something, right? So the point is that they're taking it that there is nothing, but the point is even that's a quality. You know, and they have many more that they attribute to the Nirakar, right? So they imagine a form, and so then you imagine a form according to Shastra, right? But their point is even Shastra recommends it, in their idea, since Brahman is the supreme, that form is an imagination. Just Shastra's giving that because you're working with a mundane mind. You need something to focus on until you come to the spiritual platform where you need nothing to focus on, because then you and that are one, right? So, but those who do that through Vishnu mantra say they're Vaishnavas, right? So he's counting this as one kind of Vaishnava. You know, what technically we'll acknowledge its presence, but we don't actually count it actually as Vaishnavism. But if you want to get technical, because Vaishnava means worshiper of Vishnu, then we'll say yes, they're within that. But it's not within the framework of bhakti. Right? Like that. Okay. The other kind of Vaishnava dharma asserts that Vishnu, Krishna, Rama, and so on possess eternal personal forms. According to this understanding, worship and meditation upon the individual mantras and Sri Murtis of their lordships leads to absolute eternal knowledge and the acquisition of divine mercy by the sadhaka, practitioner. In this view, the philosophy of impersonalism is called Mayavad and considered an illusory misconception distributed by the founder of impersonalism, Sri Shankaracharya. Which of these two is the Sanatan and Nitya Vaishnav Dharma? Vaishnav Das Babaji. The latter is the real Vaishnav Dharma, and it is certainly Sanatana. The former kind you spoke of is Vaishnav Dharma in name only. In actual reality, it is the opposite of the true Vaishnav Dharma. It is a non-permanent philosophy, borrowing greatly from the monistic concepts of the Mayavad school. Right, so they've taken up that is generally is a basis, right? But they also might be following some other, but specifically they take up that. Okay, Chaturbhuj. Everything is now quite clear to me. You say that the real Vaishnav Dharma is the philosophy of Sri Chaitanya Dev, and that the real and true Vaishnav Dharma does not simply consist of worshipping Sri Sri Radha Krishna, Sri Rama, Sri Nrisimha, and so on, but insist that this Vaishnav Dharma has to be performed as prescribed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All right, but how can you claim that this brand of Vaishnav Dharma is Sanatan, given that Sri Chaitanya appeared only recently? But if we're going to take that, Shankaracharya only appeared just a little bit before that. You know, so... Vaishnav Das Babaji. Actually, Vaishnav Dharma's existence since the creation of the jiva. The jivas are designated as anadi, beginningless. Right? So here, anadi is used in another context, means beginningless. Right? Then you have anadi that you've been in the material world, and when you go back to this spiritual world, it'll also be like that. Having not come into being within the purview of mundane history and creation, their manifestation is from the Supreme Lord and is thus above the linear structures of material time. Thus, it is fair to conclude that the intrinsic constitutional function of the jiva, known as Jiva Dharma, or Vaishnava Dharma, is also beginningless, primordial, and eternal. So, Jiva Dharma is the eternal Dharma of the jiva. Right? Taittiriya Upanishad 2.12 states, the Supreme Absolute Brahman is the embodiment of truth, knowledge, and eternity. He is transcendental to the purview of material time, place, and senses. One who has realized that the Supreme Brahman is simultaneously situated both in the spiritual sky and in the hearts of the jivas becomes sublimely connected with this omniscient Sri Hari in a loving relationship which completely fulfills all the spiritual desires of the jiva. Right. But later in this one, it'll also be Rasovai Sahab, means that the Lord is the source of that, and Anandamaya Obhyas. They're all in this particular section of Taittiriya. The Katha Upanishad 1.2.23 instructs, the knowledge of the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Supersoul, cannot be acquired through endless debates, sharp intellect, or erudition. However, when the jiva soul returns to the Supreme Lord, Sri Hari, in a serving mood and begs for his mercy, the Lord within the heart reciprocates and reveals himself to the jiva. Okay. So we'll end here, and then we'll continue with this in the evening. Okay, but just for those who may only be coming to the morning class, so... Class, so again, we'll start, what did you say, fifth?
Sixth.
Sixth is Thursday? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this class will start again on the 6th.
December.
So all,
December,
yes. The 6th of November March. Before. It was so good, we want to go back and start again, right? Yeah.
That was the feminine.
Yeah, of course. Divas.
Yeah.
Okay? So that's where we'll start again. So, but today we'll have all three classes, but then from tomorrow, then they'll stop and start again on the 6th. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki.
Jai.
Chaitanya Gaura Premanand.